Okay, you want Miller Lemon shit, right?
Trading Places Minute, welcome. This is the show where we discuss the film Trading Places 1 minute at a time. And my name is Tom Taylor, and I am here with my pal Mike, Mike DiMaria.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Good afternoon. And also good afternoon to Dan Lewis, our other buddy.
More of a good morning here, but we're getting close. Sure. What's going on, guys?
Hey, potato, potato. It's going all right.
I say potato, personally.
I actually have potatoes.
What kind of potatoes you got?
I have some,
some
Boston Market mashed potatoes.
Oh, that sounds divine.
I like Boston Market potatoes.
Yeah, there's rumors that they're starting to go away. But
oh, no, really?
No, that's what I heard.
Stop it. That's been a staple for
potatoes?
Many years.
They have potatoes this problem in Ireland.
I was going to say, the potatoes are as old as the Irish.
There's a Boston Market famine coming.
Yeah, well, the Boston Market, I thought, was closing, and then there was just, you know, I think that were closing some of their stores.
Oh, so. I don't like it. Every once in a while, we'll make mashed potatoes, and it's so easy to do, and they're so good, I don't know why I don't just make them every single day and just have a supply of mashed potatoes at all times.
That's right.
They're so good. Anyway.
Leftover uses that I enjoy.
Oh, leftovers? Yeah.
I like to make a little, you know, I'll throw a little... some sort of meat product, maybe some diced ham or some bacon bits,
yeah,
some cheddar, and heat it up, and then make like a ball, you know, before that, make a ball,
yeah,
and then roll it in the panko, you know, like the toasted panko, and then you get like a kind of a croquette kind of effect.
Yeah.
Holy
maybe
God.
Throw a poached egg on there. Bam.
Arancini balls.
Jesus Christ.
Arancini balls, absolutely. That was my nickname in high school. Arancini
balls. And
why
was that?
Just because I had real orangey balls.
I was picturing more like little pickled onions, little tiny
onions
they put in cocktail onions. Yeah. Anyway, I was picturing just like you have a constant supply of mashed potatoes, and you could just make yourself a kind of a slapdash sort of like shepherd's pie anytime you want with some ground beef or something.
Sure.
Yeah.
Anyhow,
or you could make,
you get tired
of
having them around.
Or you could take the mashed potatoes and make them into like a bread-shaped thing, fry them up so they're crispy like a hash brown. Use that. As
I
the
like
bread.
That. Yeah, that's good.
And then make a turkey sandwich that way.
Oh,
like
my
a
God.
Kind of a latke-y thing, except for with the mash. Mm-hmm. Thing is, Tom, I know what you have in your head right now, and this is often, you know, this pops in your head about this or that.
Mm-hmm.
And then, but then the reality is that you'd be like, I guess we have to just throw away all these mashed potatoes again. And you would just have to face that over and over again. And you're like, you know, let's cut it out with the mashed potatoes.
Can you freeze? I think you can freeze mashed potatoes, right?
I think you can, but if you defrost them too quickly or something,
what?
It's like, there's like a lot of water involved. I've done it before. Oh. We've had like, you know, Thanksgiving things where you froze some and it can get very watery and gross. But I think if you just like leave it out and let it defrost naturally for like a day or something.
Oh,
I don't know.
These are good.
Just make mashed potatoes if you're going to do that.
Just make it and meat them.
Make a fresh one if you're going to do that.
Point of view mashed potatoes. That's what we're channeling.
Oh, these are good though.
I bet they are. Mike, you enjoy. Enjoy in a way that would have infuriated you if one of us was doing it.
Once again, the hypocrisy.
No, but if you were all on the camera and you see me move the microphone up. Like up here.
That is pretty good. I can't hear a word you're saying.
Oh, you can hear me. See?
Oh, look at that.
When I take a bite,
I heard some munching. I heard some munching.
Well, I better go slow.
I'll better go slow. Oh, Tommy. Taking a drink.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, he's choking on it a little bit.
I'm
okay,
right.
There he is.
Oh, you want to hear a misophonia story, though?
Oh, sure, of course.
Real quick.
Let me get through it.
Get right through it.
Oh, you know, because we've had some celebrity passings, obviously, right?
Oh, yeah.
So we lost Shane McGowan.
Oh, the great Shane McGowan.
Which was a big one. I couldn't believe like how big, I mean, I figured out, but how big Ireland has taken that loss. They were having like processions through Dublin, like it was the queen herself. But anyways, I was watching a lot of interviews with him throughout the years, and he had this laugh that was like, it was kind of like the drunkard laugh.
Like a silent
thing?
So
he couldn't make two cents of what he was saying, but then he would be like, it's like the uncle that's always ribbing you in the ribs. Going,
yeah.
But it started to sound like someone sipped like slurping water, and I couldn't listen to it anymore.
Oh, God. Aw. Now you're glad.
Much as
that
love
sucks. Yeah. You know that when he died, he was barely recognizable. They had to identify him through his lack of dental records. This little joke.
Yeah, put that in your act.
I like that.
Too soon. Good. You're going to hear that real soon with an Irish accent, though.
Dude, I did a show last night at a place called Kell's Irish Pub in San Francisco. Cool. And there was a show downstairs, but then upstairs in the bar, so old guys there. They're all drinking Guinness. Older guys. I wouldn't say old guys. They're older guys, probably my age, to be honest. But then they had one of them had like a Shane McGowan shirt, and I bumped into him. I was like, oh, I'm sorry. He's like, it's okay. We've been here forever. We've been here all day. Shane McGowan died.
Oh, wow. You
know what I mean? This was like a week ago. Oh, yeah. You know what I mean? And so I was just like, Shane McGowan. And then we shared a little moment, you know.
Yep. One more drop of poison, then you'll dream a foreign land. 2, 3, when you pissed yourself in Frankfurt and got sifted down in Cologne. And you've heard the rattling death trains as you lay there all alone. Frank Ryan bought you whiskey in a brothel in Madrid. You decked some fucking black shirt because he was cursing all the yids. There.
Second verse, same as the first.
All right.
All right. Let's talk about one minute of Trading Places.
Yeah, Trading Places, a movie. Did we get the bookends?
We did not. No. We haven't even said what minute this is. This is minute 33.
You've been derelict.
We were chatting. We were having a little nice time with our coffees and our potatoes and our chattings. This is minute 33, and this is the one that begins with Billy Ray doing some Metal Arc Lemon shit on a vase. And it ends with the Dukes observing from the Heritage Club window as Clarence Beeks confirms the identity of a unwitting Lewis Winthorpe and is then bumped into by a passerby.
Mm, very good. Metal Lark Lemon there. So that what that means there is that he's juggling. He's sort of doing basketball tricks with the vase.
Right.
And if you don't know, Metal Lark Lemon reference, the reference to the great Harlem Globetrotter. Yeah. Meadowlark Lemon.
He actually says great Harlem name. Globetrotter in the previous minute, doesn't he? As he starts with the
vase. I guess he does.
But then he says Meadowlark Lemon specifically.
Okay, so just in case you didn't know that.
Yeah, he refers to whatever his name is.
Meadowlark Lemon.
Doesn't he say, no, the guy, doesn't he, it's not Mortimer, it's the other one.
Oh, Randy. Randolph.
Yeah, they said like Randy, like so-and-so from the Harlem Globetrotters. Didn't he say that?
No. That was
The car.
He said from the Jackson 5.
Randy Jackson.
From Jackson 5.
Yeah.
It occurred to me when I was watching it that someone perhaps in their 30s or early 30s might not know.
Mm-hmm. Oh, definitely.
About the Harlem Globetrotters and who Meadowlark Lemon is.
There are a lot of little details in this movie that are making us feel a little bit old, aren't they? Like we don't see TV set anymore. We don't necessarily know who the Harlem Globetrotters are. Things are a little bit aged.
This happens to me all the time, and they don't really talk about that when you're younger. Like older people talk about what it's like to be old. You have to hear them whine about it all the time.
Yeah.
And then you don't take them seriously, though. Everything they're telling you is going to happen to you.
Yes.
And you go, that's what they're talking about.
Yes. Oh my God, why wasn't I listening? I could have related. I could have learned something.
I could have been prepared for this. But what it is that people don't. You just assume everyone knows things. Meadowlark Lemon, and later they go, what are you talking about? What is that? And you go, you don't know. And you're thinking, of course they don't know. Why would they know that? It'd be like you knowing, everything about Jimmy Cagney.
So it sounds like everything's happening exactly as it should, because the old man complaining about being old knows that the young people cannot relate to that at all. They won't even come close to relating. They're physically unable to relate to it. They're going to live forever. And
no, you can't.
Age
has nothing
to do with them.
I mean, you can't go up to somebody and say, and they would know what you mean.
They know Chief Wiggum.
Yeah, Chief Wiggum.
Yeah, they'll go for Chief Wiggum. Yeah, I remember that old show from the 90s. Yeah.
Yeah, they might not even know Chief Wiggum, which is the reference to Edward G. Rouse. That's the thing.
Wow.
I've talked to a lot of Simpsons fans, even because they're comedian friends. The comedians tend to love The Simpsons for reasons that make a lot of sense. But they often won't even know. They'll be like, that's how Chief Wiggum talks.
Right,
they won't know that Chief Wiggum is a reference to another thing, or Professor Frink for that matter. They don't know that's Jerry Lewis from The Nutty Professor.
It is interesting having a kid and wanting to introduce him to different movies, and I realize that what drives a lot of the stuff that I show him is like, this has been referenced so much on the shows you like, you need to understand what this reference is. Like, if The Simpsons keeps talking about Goodfellas or The Godfather or something, or... Yeah,
get
Chief Wiggum
outside.
Or like
get him outside.
No, TV is inside, Mike. If it goes outside,
you got to get him outside
TV.
A little bit.
You know what you do, Tom? You take him outside. You play catch with him, and you go, "This is a reference to an old game that we used to have."
Yeah,
and this is a reference to old times when people used to go outside and do stuff.
Yeah, it used to be a fun game, but now they struggle to make it fun.
And then when he finally does catch the ball, because it's going to take him a couple hundred times before he catches it.
Anything.
And then when he catches it,
genetically, that's probably true.
It's probably true. And then when he catches it, you say you feel that impact and that feeling. Mm-hmm. That's the other person giving you something of themselves. So it's very literary, Tom, and it's very pastoral, and it means something.
Huh. What channel is that on? If I Roku it, is it Hulu? Is it Peacock?
It's referenced in Brewster's Millions.
Oh, okay. We should watch that. Cool.
Yeah. I think it's safe to say that Tom or anybody in his family does not have soft hands, Dan.
No.
Do you know what that means?
Literally,
you say
soft. The skin is soft on the hands.
Well, that's what I want to ask him.
I got city hands, Mr. Hooper.
What is having soft and shut the fuck up for a second? What does having soft hands mean, Tom? Let's ask you. Let's see if you know.
I'm using context clues. It's going to have something to do with the yield with which you accept a ball into your hand.
Because you see me on camera with the give.
No, I was saying it before. Right. I
think
that,
we've covered
that
it
locked
a few
it
times.
In for me.
He put it really well. The yield.
The yield. Yeah, that's a professorial.
Right. it looks as though the ball is sort of gravitationally attracted to the inside of your glove versus it bounces off of it.
Right. It doesn't slam into it.
They have the opposite with stone hands.
Yeah, I like the way you
stone
put it,
hands.
The yield that you give. If we're ever coaching. Lads, we should use that word.
Yeah.
The yield that you give to the balls.
Accepting the ball.
That reminds me of something. Tell me if I'm crazy here, and I don't know if we've talked about it before. There should be no such thing as a stop sign. Stop signs should not exist.
In the world?
In the world. There should only be yield signs.
Yeah.
All right, keep going.
Because
it's a joke.
It's not. Okay. It's not a joke, and I wish I could make a bit out of it. I could do like a Bill Burr kind of thing, start complaining. No! Oh!
What are you doing?
It was like four-way, you always have the people coming, and what we're really doing here is we're saying, this goes in order. I don't want to run into a car. That car doesn't want to run into me. That's all the incentive we need to not run into each other.
Right.
I don't know that anyone is necessarily, most of the time, not running into someone only because they were forced to stop by a stop sign versus most of it is you don't want to run into another car.
Right.
So if you had four yield signs and there's literally nobody there, there's no reason for me to stop my fucking car. Mm-hmm. It just makes no sense. It doesn't do anybody any good. It ruins my, you just keep going or you go a little slower, better go slow, but then you go up. But then if two people arrive at a stop sign at the same sign, you always have that little dance anyway. You're going to work most situations out. I'm tired of stopping at stop signs with no one around just because I'm like, what am I doing here? Why am I doing this?
Devil's advocate, what about the idea of defensive driving? Like anytime you come to an intersection, even if there's nobody there, is it not beneficial to stop and make sure nobody, like some maniac isn't coming who's going to ignore whatever sign is there and just breeze on through? Is there a benefit to like making sure, because if there were no signs or only yield signs, people might be like prepared to just coast through.
Okay, so let's imagine the scenario here, Tom. It's a four-way stop. You're coming to a yield. You're coming to stop at a yield sign. Mm-hmm. Another person's coming the other way. What you're saying is you don't know that other person's gonna yield. Right?
Yeah. Right.
But even if there's a stop sign, like let's say you're stopped at the stop sign and they're arriving at the stop sign.
Yeah,
you still have to make sure that they're going to stop. You still have to do that. Everybody does that. Everybody has to go, we have to totally make sure they're going to stop.
Not maniacs, though. That's Tom's point. Not a maniac. And sometimes
exactly.
You may not
you
see
them
a
both the same way.
But what's the thing about maniacs? Maniacs appear out of nowhere, right? So
right.
You could see.
They walk among us.
If you look to the left, there's nobody there. You look to the right, there's nobody there. So you proceed. The maniac could appear in 3 seconds, and they have their head out the window, and they're going, blah, blah, and they're smacking the side of the car.
And you're telling me that a stop sign makes all the difference in this situation?
As they're driving 100,000 miles an hour.
If they're such a maniac, why would a stop sign be of any
A stop sign would keep sign? Would make you stop and maybe see that guy and not go into the intersection and let the maniac go through.
But my argument is that a yield sign already says to you, stop if there's any reason to. It already is saying the same thing. It's saying.
It's basically saying this is an intersection.
There could
be somebody
coming. If someone's coming the other way, you're going to have to be careful. Mm-hmm. I don't understand what the difference is. If you roll through a yield sign and some maniac hits you, well, I don't know. You should have paid attention to the yield sign. Mm-hmm. Couldn't you just treat every yield sign like it was a stop sign?
Well. Maybe that was the concept album that of Pearl Jam's Yield album.
You would
was
know.
Just it was just a picture of a yield sign in a very desolate road.
Oh. I didn't find that album as tattoo worthy as their first album.
Not at all.
No.
Yep. Absolutely. There would be no reason with that subsequent album.
I own my mistakes.
To permanently.
I you wear them. Your mistakes.
I wear my mistakes every day.
You wear it. Printed on your body. Mistake, you wear it.
I wear it. I own it, bitch. You gotta tell me.
Should have never gotten that Furby on my hip.
Not yet, anyway. I can't. I'm having a hard time poking any holes in your logic, Dan. But although
know.
The last thing you said, could
know.
Every why? I almost want to say turn every yield sign into a stop sign. Why would you have a yield sign if you're not supposed to stop and make sure?
Because they're giving you some grace. They're saying if just.
If there's no reason, I guess what I'm saying is, let's even say that there's some situations on the margins where you've got a maniac or people are too stupid to even protect themselves.
Yeah.
Let's say that that's the case sometimes. A, those people probably shouldn't be driving, but that's a separate issue. Mm-hmm. And B, that is greatly overwhelmed by the multiplied massive amount of convenience and time saved by all of the regular people doing all the regular things all the time, all day long. Mm-hmm. And it would be like any trade-off that we make in society where we go, look, sometimes some people are going to do something stupid.
Yeah.
But let's spread convenience throughout the land. It'll more than offset that, which is a trade-off that we make all the time with lots of things. But some people are going to die in swimming pools,
right? But we had a lot of fun until then. Yeah,
done.
Now my
case
sincere hope
closed,
is
that, ipso facto QED,
et cetera,
gentlemen,
you get nothing. You get nothing.
Good day,
okay,
sir.
Sorry. Go ahead, Tommy.
My sincere hope is that by the time this episode airs, this whole conversation will be moot because the driverless cars will have taken over. Mm. And they will know when to yield and when
to
stop.
Let's get to
them. Okay, we'll get to it in a minute. The Dukes have been making a big deal for like 2 minutes about trying to explain to Billy Ray that this is all his stuff and his belongings. But the second he breaks the vase, it sounds like the Dukes, have just made $15,000 based on the insurance. So that's
a fraud.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but why hasn't Billy Ray made $15,000? They're openly saying actually this is our
good
vase.
Point.
Oh,
I see what he's saying.
TV.
Good point.
It's a continuity flaw.
I mean,
they're inadvertently or maybe not giving a peek behind their own curtain to Billy
Ray.
Giving
away
he could have
stamps.
Seen like, wait a minute, why would it be your $15,000?
Yeah.
Would it be
my maybe assuming that he wouldn't pick up on that or something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Interesting. I hadn't thought about that.
Uh-huh. Because really nothing that they say in the entire thing is like evidence that Billy Ray owns this house or this vase or anything. They just keep saying it, but there's nothing on paper. There's nothing,
and
there's
of course
nothing tangible to prove it to him.
And of course they reveal this further with the joke where when he goes, want me to break something else? Because obviously breaking things makes you money. He goes, want me to break something else? And they go, no.
Right.
They're revealing it again. They're saying, don't.
Yeah. Stop messing with
they
our
don't
stuff.
Go,
I mean,
oh, no,
stuff.
Break whatever you want.
Right.
Right. Yeah.
Well, the thing
fishy going on.
Well, in this scene, the best acting is by Coleman, because everything he's listening to, if you look at it again, he's showing the inner conflict that he's going through in his facial expressions.
Oh, wow.
He's yeah.
Like, I didn't pick up on that at all. And
he's like very torn. He's like he's listening to the two of them talk. He knows the story he knows what's going on, and he's totally tortured. You can see it on his face.
Mm. Oh,
yeah.
Man.
He's at least uncomfortable in every scene for a while.
Like, it really
he
shows
looks distressed
this
most of the time, Coleman does.
Yeah. He's trying to be a team player with the Dukes, his bosses, but he hates what he's doing. Yeah. And then Mortimer, too. Mortimer
job.
Seems like the most upset about, like actually upset about the vase.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if it was like his mom's vase or something like that, but and I don't think it is. I think it's just a vase. It's expensive, and that's why they care about it.
Mom's
but
vase.
You would think that he would be kind of like, oh, he dropped a vase. He's a big dummy. Like, I'm going to win this bet in a walk. This is going to be super easy. Like, you know, you would think that would be evidence that Billy Ray's a big dummy and he's not going to be able to run a company and Mortimer's going to win a dollar soon.
Mortimer is, he's really not a good guy.
No. He's a bit of a skunk.
Randolph is a much better guy, even though they're both within the realm of evil.
Yes.
And he's much better. And you know, speaking of the acting, Eddie Murphy, really good here. Not just the acting, but also they're kind of showing you that he's a good guy. Like he breaks it, and then he goes like, look, I'm really, really sorry about that. He pops out of his little fun thing.
Yeah.
And he sort of goes like, hey, you guys, I'm really sorry about that. I didn't mean to break your shit. You know what I mean? He's he's an upstanding guy.
He's a good guy.
Yeah.
I'd be proud to have him run my company.
Absolutely. I'm proud to have him do some complicated thing for my company where it involves buying something at the right. I don't understand it, but that's fine.
He can buy something at the right time.
Dan Aykroyd
gets it. He's going to do some Metal Arc Lemon on these stocks. You'll see.
Exactly.
It is good stuff. And then we get to like, I guess.
Books. Go ahead.
Sorry. Oh, no, go ahead. I was going to talk about the next thing.
Well, I was just saying there's some books behind him. There's they got a book on Cezanne.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
There's some expressionism books. They put a little couple of art books behind him to give it that feel of like, oh, this is a very, in case somebody does a podcast about this and notices it.
Right.
Yeah.
Now, do you think Lewis as a character has ever once cracked one of those books?
Lewis. Ever cracked what? Sorry.
Any of those books? Do you think he's those seem like books that are there almost as decoration, like
you go to, and that's what they are. And everybody knows this. You go to a Cezanne exhibit, for instance, at the Art Institute of Chicago, where they've got some Cezannes of their own, and they've got some on loan from the Musée d'Orsay or whatever it is. Mm-hmm. And you buy a $70 book, large format book. Mm-hmm. And you put it on your table, and then the table says, I was there. That's the book. Right. That's what that says.
This is the sort of thing I think about. Yeah. I'm a Cezanne kind of guy.
You never like go into the bathroom at somebody's house, and there's a large scale Cezanne book, so you can look at paintings.
Right. Yeah. Or it's not like in a cupboard behind the cereal boxes or something. It's out in the open for you to see.
And they even have a name for it. Coffee table book, of course.
Yes.
And that's what that name kind of says, like you said. This is what I think about. This is the type of things I do. You should see.
This is a huge, unwieldy book that is uncomfortable to read. No one's ever going to actually sit down and read this. It is there to be on display on a coffee table as a conversation piece.
No one's ever had like in college, they got a stack of Hustlers. And then at the very bottom underneath it is a Cezanne book. And someone goes, what's this? Goes, oh, no, that's mine. Hand. And I said, no. What's this?
Tell me a little about it.
Yeah. Cezanne's. or the other way, like, I had no idea you were into Hustler. That's very interesting. You got the Hustler coffee table book. That's excellent. It's way too big to look through, but you can think about it.
I did have a Playboy coffee table book for a while
that
someone bought me in the 90s. My friends it was Christmas or birthday, somebody, big, it was like 50 years of Playboy.
Wow.
And I did find it interesting in the sense that, look, there's a lot of hot ladies on there. I'm not going to lie to you. But it is interesting to see from the 50s, not just the style of photography, but just watching the trends sort of slowly unfold where you had like and I love the 70s.
Oh, sure.
The greatest.
Of course you do.
Like late 70s, or actually the whole 70s.
I was recently, people must know about
natural.
Archive.org, I think it is. It's like an internet archive, and you can look up old magazines and stuff. People have like scanned entire magazines and things. And I was going through like National Lampoon's recently, just like looking for stuff and like the ads between the articles and everything are what kills me. Like, look at that beautiful like fake wood paneled stereo thing or something.
Yeah.
This is like the height of technology. This is what they're so into.
It's mainstream.
So
quadraphonic.
Exactly. Yeah.
It was mainstream. Yeah. It was mainstream.
Yeah.
Reading. Right.
Even Benson and Hedges ad.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. With a beautiful sunset under the mountain and everything.
Yeah. Yeah. People smoking and being like, get some
time.
Benson and Hedges. They got a smooth draw. Easy
draw. They would hold the cigarette like this.
Oh, between the middle.
Oh, yeah.
Between the middle fingers. Yeah. That's nice.
Like you're just trying to hide your mouth, not actually smoking.
That's how Belushi does it in that SNL skit, the little mini donuts.
I don't know.
You ever seen that one where he's like, it's like, oh, Mr. Belushi just broke another world record, and it's like a track meet.
Oh, right.
Oh, yeah.
He's got the USA thing, and he goes, I prepare by eating mini chocolate donuts. And he's munching. He's like, and he's got a cigarette. He's like,
that's awesome.
They gave me the sugar that I need.
That's good.
That's beautiful.
It was back when they can make simpler jokes.
Do you even know anybody on Saturday Night Live now? I know.
Yeah,
I can't
I
think
do.
Of. I don't
and
mean
I
personally. I'm
guy.
Not talking about
no,
personally.
No, I do. I do know a guy on there.
Well, I'm talking
His
about
name is
just...
Michael Longfellow. I wouldn't say I know him. I met him. I did two shows with him in San Francisco. Yeah. He was coming through town, and he was just we were just doing shitty bar shows, and he showed up at a couple of them. You know, one of these shows that he did, and I remember meeting him. I remember being really good. He's very he's very handsome and kind of like has a kind of thing, you know.
Yeah.
And then I met him, whatever, and I'm like, oh, it's an LA guy just come through town. And then like a year later, he's like, hey, I'm on, because I'm friends with him on Instagram, whatever. He's like, hey, I'm on Saturday Live now. I was like, whoa.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Anyway, that's the only guy I know, though, to your point.
Looks a little like John Mayer.
Oh. Yeah, like a thin John Mayer, maybe mixed with a little bit of Talking Heads.
David Byrne. John Mayer. Yeah, I can see. I see what you're saying. Yeah. Just because
I think
know,
I only to answer your question, Mike. I think I only I'll see people as like character actors and stuff, and then find out later that they're from SNL.
Oh, right.
Yeah, and I can't even think of who those are now.
I haven't turned that show on in decades.
Man. The reason I don't like it is they don't do any fun sketches anymore. They only do. I mean, maybe it seems like they don't do many, but they only do off the top. They'll do a cold open, which will often be whatever happened in the news. That like you know they'll have George Santos on there lying, and the joke is about how he lies or something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
the joke is always topical, and then like then I don't. Of course, I don't care about the monologue almost always, unless it's like a comedian that I really like, which is not that common.
Mm-hmm.
It's usually an actor, and who gives a shit because they write some stuff for him. And then there's like then they'll do a few of the sketches will be like recurring sketches that like where I like I get the joke. I don't really need to see the sketch again.
Yeah.
And then the two musical acts, plus there's not much time to like have like a sketch where it's just like, oh my God, what if people had, you know, dorsal fins? You know, like they don't, there's never like a fun sketch where it's just like a weird idea that someone wrote and it's really funny. Yeah. It just never happens.
I'm realizing that I probably need to go through and watch like a best of or something of Kristen Wiig because I think she's probably awesome. And like what I've seen of her, like a little bit, like we were at somebody's house and they were showing. Oh, you got to see this! And like usually, if somebody says, "Oh, you got to see this," and they turn on SNL, you're like, "Oh my god!" But it was her. It was like her doing like Liza Minnelli trying to turn on a light or something, trying to turn on a lamp. And she's just doing Liza Minnelli like with her crazy like
she's
you know
like
gesticulating
and
everything
weird.
And super crazy walking around and stuff. And there's another one where she's doing Anne Margaret kind of doing this, or Anne Margaret trying to throw away a piece of paper or something like that. I'm like, oh, I could watch this all day. This is fantastic. This is great.
She's, I don't know that there's anybody funnier. She's amazing.
Well, there's,
that might be true.
That's what you do all day, anyways, Tom. You and your,
it's
and that
not.
Boy here.
I wish it were.
So just throw, it's either that, something's always on, though.
Right.
What do you want to watch, boy?
Yeah. How are we going to spend our together time?
Let's watch Raiders again for the 15,000th time.
I think he's seen it once.
I wish Tom was famous so that Kristen Wiig could do a sketch about Tommy trying to play catch with his son.
Yeah.
In the yard.
It's just me sitting
just
there
watch
in front
the
of the TV.
You see Bridesmaids?
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, that's just, she's a genius. I
love
her.
She has the single, one of maybe the single funniest moment of anything I've ever seen in the show Last Man on Earth.
Oh,
when she,
I love that,
she's alone in a bunker somewhere and she's feeding her dogs, is a dog or a cat, but feeding them some dog food. She's like, kind of like, oh, I've been eating the same stuff for over and over again. I'm going to try this dog food. And just her reaction to trying the dog food is like it's like a half a second reaction. And it's the funniest thing I've ever seen.
I love her.
Yeah. She's fantastic. Yeah. Then we get back to like plan B of this plan or not plan B, but like part B, like the messing with Lewis. Because now we're at the Heritage Club with Mortimer and Randolph looking out the window at Beaks, who pinpoints...
Speaking of, okay, I don't want to miss the sign from the Heritage Club. Did we talk about the sign from the Heritage Club?
I feel like we must have, but we should talk about it again just
in case.
If
we hadn't, Heritage Club, quote, with liberty and justice for all, members only. I think that's very funny.
Dichotomy.
It's pretty great. Subtle and great.
I like that. Yeah. And then that's like their way of setting the scene. That's like their establishing shot almost for this when they're switching to Clarence Beeks is pointing at Dan Aykroyd to say, is this the guy whose life I'm going to ruin right
and
here?
And they give the slow nod.
The classic slow nod.
Well, that dichotomy is like, it's a, you know who Neil Brennan is?
Yeah.
He's like Dave Chappelle's writer.
Yeah. One of his
closest collaborators.
Yeah.
And he's just like this is like just nerdy white guy. It's been writing with him since the beginning. He's a stand-up comic. He has a joke kind of
That's
like
really
that. He's
funny.
like, you ever see these fucking Confederate people with the Confederate flag on the back of their truck, and then they also have the American flag right next to it?
Back a
it's
lane,
like,
dude.
yeah, that's like it's like having a or so he's talking about a tattoo, like a tattoo of this, and then you have it right next to it. And he's like, it's like having a tattoo about, you what was it? I have to way that we put it. He's like, oh, it's like having a tattoo of how much you love your husband, and then having another tattoo about how you tried to get away from him. And he said, like, there's the rebel flag that says, the American flag, how much I love this country, and then the rebel flag is how I tried to get away from that country, but they wouldn't let me.
I like the infrastructure and the fast food restaurants and some of the movies and stuff, but.
Be like having a North Vietnamese flag and a South Vietnamese flag on the back of your truck. Like something's wrong here.
I mean, unless you're making sort of statement and you're like, oh, the yin yang
oh,
thing, they're
no,
coming
right.
together or
Coexist.
Something. Come on, let's all be pals. We're all Americans.
By the way, oh, go ahead, Tommy.
No, you go ahead.
There is of course, behind Clarence Beeks, you got the ad thing for the hot dog stand.
Yes.
And it says Frankfurters and cold drinks.
Yeah.
And I just don't, I sort of miss Frankfurter as a word.
Yeah. I don't know if I ever used it, but it's a good word to see. It
was
again,
already
that
on
looks
its way
old.
Out when I was growing up. But I feel like having a couple of Frankfurters.
That's the Germans.
It's like hamburgers, Frankfurters.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Franks and beans.
Franks and beans. Go ahead, Tom. I'm sorry. I just want to point out the Frankfurter
thing. No, I was going to point out something else in the background. We were just talking about, like, old magazines in the 70s and 80s and everything. Looking at these, at the cars parked on the street in the background, they are still the kind of straight, boxy, hard-edged things from, like, the 70s and 60s and stuff, even. When did that... And so you glance at them, you're like, oh, this is an old movie. Like, it was before my time or before this time. So, like, at what point did... Like, could you look at a car from like 1985 and be like, "Oh, this is more"?
Oh, early 90s, it's the same way.
Is it really?
You look at movies.
They start to get a little rounder on the edges in the early 90s with the Ford Probe and the kind of Bonneville.
Oh, sure.
Yeah, but the base, but the vast majority of cars were still kind of very distinct to the 90s. You don't see those cars on the roads, and you don't see a 1992 car on the road very rarely.
But what do they look like? I can't even picture.
They,
like,
they
what
look
cars
out
look
of place.
Like
It looks
they
like
look
a.
Crazy.
It's not as go. It's not going back as far as like a Reliant K. Remember the Reliant K and the K car. The
Reliant K.
Oh,
we had a K car.
Yeah,
my family had a K car.
Very economical and very It's like the Yugo.
Oh, the Yugo was the next level.
Yeah.
At some point, I watched some sort of online thing where a guy was walking you through what a Yugo was like.
Yeah.
And it really is kind of shocking.
Yeah. It's like a tin. It's like a tin box.
The guy's like, "You see how the handle works on this thing?" He's like, "Look at this. Like, and if this happens, then your door won't work anymore."
There's
I mean?
No
like,
frills.
Walking...
Zero.
Yeah.
And one of them blow off a bridge or something.
Like oh God!
Stiff wind. It was like $1,200. I think it was like $1,200 or something like that.
Was
how
it?
Much?
Wow.
I don't know. Maybe something
worth
like that.
Worth every penny.
Well, we'll That's look crazy. Into that. When did
not even
cars...
a country anymore? It's amazing.
Wow, times have changed.
Yeah, it's a Yugoslavian.
As kind of like with the vase in the previous minute, it's too bad that like the person bumps into Clarence Beeks, but then we don't get the immediate
he's gonna throw
after
him to the side.
Effect yet. Yeah,
you're gonna see.
I assume
he's
say,
show
"Oh, pardon
his
me,
character.
I'm so sorry."
In case you were wondering about the scrupulousness of Clarence Beeks.
Yeah, this is before. Yeah, of course, this is before Breakfast Club, so we didn't know just glancing at him that. He might be the kind of guy to handle the situation this sort of way.
It's funny how I know Tom will relate to at least so how things get stuck in your head where, there was a pitcher, I believe, named Jalen Beeks.
Oh, yeah.
He played, I think, for the Red Sox and Rays maybe. But anyway, once I saw the name, immediately Clarence Beeks pops into my head. There's no way that Beeks, B-E-E-K-S, can enter. That's what it is for me for the rest of my life. It's the guy in the hat with the trench coat, and he used to work at the high school. He's the principal, and
he made an impression. That guy.
Fuck off.
What do you have to say, Tom?
That's when he's on the phone. That's later.
That's
on.
He's on the phone later. Yeah,
I love that fuck off line he does.
Fuck
later.
Off.
Yeah,
it's like a GIF.
That's incredible.
You find that GIF everywhere.
He's got three of like the most standout laugh out loud moments in the movie, I think. And what's about to happen is one of them, and that fuck off is the other, is another
he
one.
Throws the guy and the fuck off.
Yeah.
What's the third one?
The third one is when they're on the train and the jig is up. He realizes that they just switched his bag and stuff like that, and he's got a gun on them all, and just like, and he's already got a gun on them. He's already in control. He just goes, "Fucking weirdos!" It's hysterical.
Fucking weirdos for no reason. Yes. That's so good.
It's like the movie's funny. There's a lot of funny things in this movie, but his reactions to things are almost like outside of the movie in a way. Like you know, fucking weirdos, fuck off.
Am I wrong that there used to be more of those kind of moments where they don't really, it doesn't really do anything anymore? It's sort of capturing the moment, but it's not really, there's no reason for that line.
Yeah.
And it just it's adds almost not kind part of funny of the character. You
well,
shave
it was a
your
tasteful
ass.
Use, but it was also,
you shave your ass.
It was a tasteful use of a expletive.
Yeah.
Fucking weirdos.
Yeah. There's only a couple like really sharp expletives in this movie.
Mm-hmm.
And two of them are from this guy.
It's so honest. It's just like, it's like that's what you would say in that situation. It's not like,
yeah,
written.
It's real.
It's not like a clever twist on anything. It's just like, yeah, fucking weirdos.
Right. They're not doing a fun like little like a joke from Friends where it's like time right. Right. The guy's just like fucking weirdos. Yeah. So great.
That's how Rachel would take that. Did you swear at me? Ross, do something. I don't have
Mike spends a lot of time thinking about this.
We
show
don't have our somebody's sitting in our couch that we always get at the coffee shop. Somebody what are we gonna do?
Should we do trivia?
Sure. Oh,
I guess we should. Look at that. Hey, I'm twisting things up a little bit. Tell me what you think about this. Should we do a round of Caddyshack trivia,
which we haven't done in a long time? Oh, my God. What are we doing with this
we've
now?
We've done that.
Should
we've
we not?
Exhausted that. We've exhausted
we don't have,
that.
I mean, we haven't exhausted the trivia. I know that much.
Do a couple, and then it'll be like,
let's do a couple and ascertain whether this has been a waste of time. And then, but we reserve the right to ridicule you if it doesn't go well. Is that okay?
Fair enough. That is absolutely fair and true and honest.
Okay.
And
I'll
for anyone
go in
who
the
doesn't
spirit
know,
of compromise.
The three of us, we started this whole podcasting thing with the Caddyshack Minute, which you can still find on Apple, whatever's, and everything, and all the regular podcast places. And we as we started that, my cousin got me the Caddyshack trivia game.
Too much
going
on. Just
this is a card from that game.
Setup.
Question one. Are Ty and Danny aware that they are chasing the same woman? See, there's a lot of true or false, like either or answers in this game. I'm not totally into that, but that's a fair question.
As far as these go, though, that one is a little interesting.
It is
what point in the movie, though? At what point?
Ever?
Because I think Ty doesn't know, but I think Danny figures it out at some point.
They're not really chasing.
I don't know if that's true.
And they're not chasing.
Like, Ty's not chasing. He had a one-night stand.
She's chasing both of them, actually.
She's just pulling around banging everybody in the movie.
Go for it.
I'm going to say, I think the answer is obviously no, but it is interesting to think about. And the answer, according to the card, is no. According to the director of the film, he has a name. His name is Harold Ramis. What is Danny really seeking in Caddyshack? So this is not even like the text
acceptance
of the movie. This is like what a guy said in an interview.
Entree into the world, upper crust.
That is a good. Well, I should say there's multiple choice
acceptance,
options
like
here.
Acceptance and
acceptance. Not going to college.
Four or five cokes.
A shaved ass.
Meaning of life.
Okay, here are the options on the card: a girlfriend, money, fame, a role model.
I guess it would be a role model.
It's obviously going to be a role
model. Because he's lost.
That sounds like something that the director of the movie would say.
He thinks for a while that maybe it's Judge, but then it's Ty later.
Yeah.
And then,
that kind of makes sense. And again, true or false, Caddyshack was made into a Broadway play.
No, it was not.
True.
That is false. It was not made into a Broadway play, Dan.
I figured I'd go for true in part because to be fun and second of all to say that it should have been a Broadway play.
What was the answer for the meaning?
Oh, a role model. Mm. Yeah.
Great.
Should we do another one of those? That was that whole card.
No.
Or we could do our regular trivia if you want.
A bunch of yes or no questions.
Yeah.
Should we do a regular trivia, or is that
just
for
do
trivia?
A Hollywood fucks and be
okay,
done.
Okay, Hollywood fucks from 1989. Here we go. Top five answers on the board. What 1986 item? Why do they call it an item?
The color.
What 1986
purple.
Item had first son Ron Reagan making a cameo appearance as a jock?
Wow. One crazy
question, no
summer.
Idea. Ooh, that's a kind of good answer.
Just bam, just throwing it out there.
That's as good as anything I can think of. What about
you,
Mike?
There you go.
Wasn't he an Alvin Ailey trained dancer or a Juilliard trained dancer? You're
I don't
laughing.
Know,
was
he?
He was. Yeah.
Wow, I never heard that.
And his dad had a hard time with it.
Could it be the movie Class?
No, but I'm looking at the answer now. That's a little bit closer. The answer is Soul Man.
Oh, he was in Soul Man, a movie, shocking movie if you saw it today.
Right.
It's absolutely mind-blowing to someone to see today.
Mind-blowing that it exists,
that it got past
the pitch stage. Yeah.
No, I disagree. It's not mind-blowing that it got past the pitch stage because people were not completely...
Yeah.
It's just weird. It's just different because of the time, solely because of the...
Yeah, it's true. You're right.
Oh, nobody noticed. Nobody noticed that there was blackface in this movie.
Yeah, that's the plot of the movie was blackface. Yeah,
yeah, the plot of the movie.
And then like James Earl Jones is in that movie. Like, is he sitting like, oh, I have to pay the rent. What am I going to do? I have to be in this movie. I was offered this role, and I guess I got to do it.
This is a much deeper subject, but it involves how. Isn't it about how certain subjects catch onto the public consciousness, and that possibly James Earl Jones was like, I'm totally humiliated right now. Much more likely James Earl Jones is going, yeah, it's just something that people do, but it doesn't. Now he would be like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
Because
there are a lot of things like that.
Because
the
conditions have changed.
Yeah.
So he was back to Ron Reagan Jr.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
He was, he dropped out of Yale University. He was on the politician path, obviously.
Oh, sure. Dropped out of Yale.
Yeah, to do the Yale. In 1976, after one semester to become a ballet dancer, he joined the Joffrey Ballet in pursuit of his lifelong dream and participated in the Joffrey Two Dancers, a troupe for beginning dancers when he was mentored by Sally Braley.
A dream that was dashed after his appearance in Soul Man, starring C. Thomas.
No, his dad had a tough time with that, obviously.
I can't imagine that.
And then there's another article that says,
"You just sell arms to Iran like your old man."
Yeah. No, but this is the thing. I mean, because Ron Reagan Jr. is always a commentator. He's a political commentator too. He's always, he's a Democrat, but he's always on. And I think like this wild, like the Trump era of wackiness that started with the Tea Party, gives somebody like him an opportunity to come on and say, you know, I'm a Democrat, and my dad would hate these. He always defends his dad.
Right.
And I get it. It's his dad, but he wasn't a good guy, you know.
No.
And he did a lot to, like, especially like when the AIDS epidemic started. Like he just refused to do anything about it. You know, he hated gay people. He was, his foreign policy, all the stuff. But it's always, it gives a, like a license to people who can now view who their siblings or their fathers or whatever or are like seen as moderates now. It's like they're not moderates.
Right.
He's still wildly, relatively popular. I mean, among certain circles, he's hated, but as
by conservatives,
goes, he's widely a popular person. One of the more popular presidents.
Right.
Yeah. So maybe he's just trying to use that as a.
I get it.
Sort of to say like, listen, we're getting out of control here. My dad would have.
You
been
people
like,
were,
but he doesn't
this guy,
say. He never
he
says even
this.
My dad.
Not even
he
my
just,
dad.
No,
right.
He just always says, you know, my dad didn't stand. My dad stood for this, that, and the other thing. I'm like, come on now.
I don't really know. I've not really seen him that much. He's a Democrat, huh?
Yeah, he went. He was always like during, like Obama presidency, and he would always be out there. And like when the Tea Party started.
Not a lot of Republican ballet dancers, is my guess.
As far as I can tell, no.
There should be. It's a good thing.
What live creatures are eaten in the banquet scene in Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom? What live creatures?
No idea.
They eat.
You've got monkey this. Brains. You got beetles. Brains. You got none of those.
Beetles.
Are, there's
like
eels.
Scarabs.
There's eels all over the table. There's a big giant snake filled with eels.
Snake. Snakes.
What do they eat
eels
that's alive?
And monkey brains. Alive, you're saying?
It says what? Live creatures are eaten in the banquet scene in Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom. I'm looking at the answer and
bugs?
I'm calling bullshit on it.
Tom,
the
you answer, would know.
The answer here is snakes. And I think that they are thinking of a shot of a guy holding a bunch of eels and just like downing them down his throat.
Is that eels?
Those are eels, though. Those are not snakes, and I don't know that they're alive. Well, I think they are alive because you see them wiggling around on the table and stuff.
But,
right I don't
right
think
that's say that, you know, it's
horrifying scene to me as a kid. Just
Dear Trivial Pursuit.
Just horrifying.
Now it's horrifying to me as an adult because I'm trying to listen to the adult conversation that Indiana Jones is having at the other end of the table. All this goofery is going on with Willie and all the food and everything. Mm. I digress. Mm. What 1986 John Cleese movie did the New York Times call a gem of comic timing?
Fish Called Wanda.
Is that Fish Called Wanda? Why do I want to think that's too early for a fish?
It's
oh, God, it's not.
Early. No?
I'll say this. I have never heard of this movie, but now I see that a gem of comic timing is a pun.
Gem.
Romancing the Stone.
The movie's called Clockwise. No.
Comic
right.
timing.
Never, ever heard of it. Owning a
Clockwise.
Gem.
Clockwise.
Oh, I know,
you know
the
what
answer
they
to
called
this
that movie in the Southern Hemisphere. They called it. They also called it Clockwise.
They called it A Fish Called Wanda.
No, they just called it Clockwise.
They did.
Yeah, they didn't.
What slang expression for kiss does Billy teach Norman in On Golden Pond? We all
Sucking
know the answer to this.
Face.
Suck Never face.
It. Never saw it.
Really?
On Golden Pond. Yeah.
You were not alive in 1982, I take it, or 81, whatever it was. What former this is relevant because we just lost Norman Lear. What former star of Mary Hartman appeared in The Big Chill? God. Who was on Mary Hartman?
Mary Lou Henner.
I know the cast of
Big
Chill much
better
than I do Mary Hartman.
Meg Tilly. I don't know.
Jeff Goldblum. No, it's Mary Kay Place.
Oh, Mary Kay Place, yeah.
Good old Mary Kay Place.
Her. Very 80s.
Yes, very, very, yeah.
Yeah.
What movie, this is our last question, what movie centers on an attack on the Brown family by a lethal litter of krites? K-R-I-T-E-S. Oh, is that, not Ghoulies, Critters. Is it Critters, that stupid movie? I never saw it. I apologize. I shouldn't call it stupid. I've never seen it.
Could be Critters. Probably stupid, unless you're playing the
percentage. How do I know that? I got the right answer. It's Critters. Okay. How in the world do I know that? I've never seen the movie.
This card is boring.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
This card,
everybody.
Go.
But that was trivia, for what it's worth. Look at that.
Okay,
card.
Good deal. That's the music. And
yeah.
That's wonderful.
That means we're probably out of stuff to
it's
say.
It's over.
We did it. We nailed it.
Over,
it's over, Johnny.
It's
over,
over.
Johnny. It's over.
What? It's not over till they say it's over.
Something about a forklift.
Yeah. And I come back and get what? The movie was horrible. So much killing in there, just over a big misunderstanding. You know, some people are, it's just ridiculous.
We don't listen enough, do we, Mike, as a people? No. If we just listened to each other, we wouldn't have to watch
Brian Dennehy had a chip on his shoulder.
He did. He didn't like the cut of Sylvester Stallone's jib.
See, that's okay. Let's stop here for a second. Give me
I
one
wasn't
more
about
minute
to end the show, but okay.
Give me a minute. Give me a minute. That's right,
Mr. Hard Out over
it's
here.
It's from the Mr. Man train.
That's right.
So Brian Dennehy's a cop, right? This is right post Vietnam.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, he obviously didn't go to Vietnam,
right?
So that's Stallone's a veteran. He's wearing an army jacket. Yes, he's got some scraggly hair, but he's a Vietnam veteran. So a cop. I'm going somewhere with this. He sees him, and he immediately doesn't like him.
Right.
Is it because now is this like a take on the conservative saying that when the soldiers came back from Vietnam, they protested the war, and he's seeing him as one of those like protester hippies? Because I don't see why a cop would during post like right out of a war would give such trouble to a vet who was in war.
I think in the shorthand of the situation, a vet looking like he does with the long hair and stuff, He might have a reputation for being a troublemaker or something, or a drifter, or a no good scallywag or something.
He's drifting because he's just back from war. He needs to
right, exactly,
leg up.
Right. But he is the sheriff or whatever.
G.I.
Bill. Just seeing like a drifter coming through town, and I mean, does he zero in on him because he's a vet, or is it just because he's a?
He says something. He says something. I remember because he says something about the way he's wearing that jacket or something like that.
Oh right, yeah. I think you're right.
Yeah. But there is a discussion about him being a just back from Nam.
Yeah.
So you think,
by the way,
this
is the exact situation, the exact dynamic playing out between the two cops and Billy Ray in Center Square Park, starring
You're way off base on that.
No, listen. Cops against the vets. Even if it's a fake.
What's interesting is that I heard the other day that Brian Dennehy himself, the actual actor, did a Stolen Valor thing.
Oh, he did?
You familiar with that?
No.
Yeah, that's when you pretend to be
He claimed to be in the Vietnam War. Brian Dennehy claimed to be in the Vietnam War. Apparently, it served in the Marines. But he played football in the Marines, and he kept saying he was injured in Vietnam. And then later, he had to be like, I'm sorry, that was all.
Wow.
Interesting.
Yeah. Interesting.
Stolen Valor.
Why would you even try that? Why would anybody try? There's so many stories of people like making
it's
up shit
strange.
That it's obviously easily verifiable.
And that guy who claims to have been on the towers in 9/11, that he was on the League, that comic actor.
Oh, I don't know.
You ever hear about this other guy? Oh, it was a great story. Yeah, he was just one of those. He's a comic actor. I forgot his name. It's kind of a longer name, but he was in this show called The League, which was a popular show.
Mm-hmm.
And he had said he was in the towers in 9/11, or he was there or something. Yeah. It turns out that somebody uncovered that he wasn't there at all, and he had to totally.
God.
He said he'd started lying about it at some point, and then he like it got out of control, and so he had to keep going.
Yeah,
it was, like,
I guess I can
thing.
See that.
He was totally he was shamed for it.
Yeah, well, I mean, justly so, I would think.
Anyway,
let's get out of here. We're
done. And now, Tommy will play the Mr. Man Train to play us out.
Oh God, again? Really? We're gonna
wait a minute.
No, to play us out to end the
show.
Oh,
to play us out to end the show.
End the show.
There's no words on it. What does that mean? To end the show?
As the show ends, as the Mr. Man Train is going. Is that a way to do that? Can we?
I guess there is a way to do it. Sure. Yeah, we can do that.
Talk to Johnny about
that. Okay, wait a minute here. Wait a minute.
I'll write it and we'll do it live.
It says, take a good look at the sheriff. Behind his office desk, you see a U.S. Marine Corps and his silver star. When the sheriff says, you think Rambo is the only one who had a tough time in Vietnam? That's it. So he...
Oh,
I guess he was in Vietnam too, even though he looks a little older. And then he's like, so I bet you it is at the end of the day. I served my country and now I'm back, you know, in society. And this guy is comes back and badmouths the war and drifts. Mm. That's probably what it is. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Sorry. Go ahead with your.
We'll never run out of reasons to not like each other. That's the important message from First Blood and everything else.
Yeah.
All right, Mike's finishing his mashed potatoes. That means
gold
we're
spoon,
all done.
Gold-plated spoon.
Oh, look at you. La-dee-da. Everyone, thank you for listening to Minute 33 of the Caddy Show. No, Trading Places Minute.
Oh, for God's sake.
How many years ago is that? I still keep doing it. Thank you for listening. We will be back next week with more of this. No. And here's a clip from the Mr. Man Train to play us out. Take it away.
Mr. Man.
You want a hamburger? No, a cheeseburger.
Toby Wong. Toby Chung, fucking Charlie Chan.
Sir!
Fuck me.
He'll keep calling me until I come home.
He ain't saying.
You insulted him a little bit. You got a little out of order yourself.
Just give me a second.
Docking Bay 94.
Yankee bean soup, coleslaw, and tuna surprise.
Do my forms for my hands.
Bell Lucio!
Nothing at all!
Dr. Man.
It was a stone groove.
Mr. Man!
You are the most righteous.
Yeah, right. Just get the fuck out, man. Let's go. Shit.